I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me, and now news director Colin Jeffrey switches to his alter ego as Showbiz Boy to talk about showbiz stuff from this week, including four movies we have to review, and that's not even all the movies that are coming out this weekend.
Nope.
So I will let you start off with the horror movie Lights Out.
Okay, Lights Out comes out this week. It's based off of a YouTube video that's 2.5 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And watch the YouTube video. Sure. Why not? It's good.
Okay.
It's legitimately scary. I just showed it to Josh, and he jumped multiple times in 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
A very neat little sort of feature here is that in the YouTube video, there's a woman flipping a light switch. And if you've seen the preview for this, you've seen a woman flipping a light switch. It's the same woman. So pretty cool. She started out on YouTube, and now she's in a major motion picture.
Okay, well, here's my question. If it's good as a 2.5 minute YouTube video, did we need to spend 100 minutes making it into a movie?
Well, we spent 80, so okay. Go them. 80 minutes, perfect length for this. You may ask, why is a horror movie coming out during the summer and not Halloween? Because it's not a fully fleshed out horror movie. It has one gimmick, and that is simultaneously its greatest strength and its sort of biggest flaw. What does this center around? It centers around a young family, a mother with her child, and then her second child is off on her own in a rebellious, 20-something. So what happens is during the opening scene, we see a man married to this woman, and he's closing up his shop for the day. And every time the lights go out, there's some being there. And when the lights are on, the being can't be in the light. So that's the main gimmick here. There's this being that can just exist in the dark.
Okay.
And that's the gimmick through the entire movie.
Let me just ask you this. At any time in the movie, does somebody say, let's get a nightlight?
They're smart enough. Yeah. Yes.
Let's just make sure there's a light on all the time and really would handle this problem.
Yes. Yeah, and they deal with that effectively enough that I'm not thrown off by the fact that even though they had lights on, they're not always on, if that makes sense. Again, I can't really talk too much about it because it's one gimmick. And so if I tell you how it works this one time, it'll it'll take the
Let me just ask you this. After they decide, you know what, we should have a nightlight, does somebody turn the nightlight off?
No.
Where's the problem?
Do they get the electric bill?
Glow stick pants.
Once they get the electric bill, and it's astronomical.
Hold on just a second, Dan. Excuse me for interrupting you.
What?
Glow stick pants?
Sure.
What are those?
I don't know. Pants made out of glow stick material?
Oh, my.
It's always light.
I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. I thought Ian had an actual product that he was talking about. Mm-hmm. No, he has a million-dollar idea.
Ian, for
just for this guy. I don't know where else you would use glow stick pants, but I guess there could be other applications.
Halloween. Caves.
Sure.
I would say for like 5 seconds, Peon became me. So
do you have to shake them up, the glow stick pants? Do you have to
Of course you do.
Crack them and jump around?
You crack them right at the knee.
Yeah.
Is somebody writing this down? This is $1 million idea.
Yes. You bend down like in a catcher's position.
Yeah.
And then
there you go.
And then they glow.
You solved it.
Jenkins, turn your pants down, man. That's way too bright. The cops are going to see us.
Jenkins.
Jenkins is always in trouble.
Oh, he's
okay,
crazy.
Back to whatever you were talking about, Dan.
The light.
Crap, I don't know.
He was talking about the utility bill. Yes.
When it came.
It works nicely because it has that one scare, and so they're able to refine it, if that makes sense. Like, they have to find different ways to present this to you, and they do a pretty good job. And another thing that I like about it is you're not constantly in these new environments. You're in the same, so you have an idea of the layout of a house. It helps with the scare when you've got an idea, oh, this should be here. And if you're in a constantly new environment, you lose that.
Okay. It's kind of like those Paranormal Activity movies.
Yeah. Once they show you the layout of the house, you're like, wait, something's off here. I can sort of tell. And you can start to feel that.
Is there anybody in this movie we would know?
No. That's not true. I guess you would probably know Maria Bello. She plays the mom.
I like her a lot.
So that's you know.
Okay.
I think you will like Teresa Palmer after you watch this movie as the young woman in this, trying to escape the lights out demon or beast or, the lights out creature. My biggest problem with it, though, is the fact that it is just one scare. This is a jump scare. The entire movie is a jump scare, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna take you behind this. A jump scare has been called a magic trick because it uses the same three parts as a magic trick. The pledge. You hear a noise. That is something scary. And the character will go to investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get the turn. They go there and they see, oh, it was just a branch against the tree or against the side of the window or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the prestige is the monster appears and there you go. That is a jump scare. Those are the three parts of a jump scare.
Okay.
And then you've got all sorts of other things.
What was the first part of it?
The pledge.
Okay. And you reminded me of a bit Eddie Murphy used to do in his stand-up act a long, long time ago about how the horror movies would be so different if black people were in them. And he used the Amityville Horror as the example. He said, you know, in that movie, this white family or white bunch of kids, no, I think it's a family, they move into this house and they hear a voice saying, get out. And they go to investigate. Mm-hmm. He said, you put a black family in there? Man, we really love this place. This is beautiful. I think we can spend the rest of our life here. Get out. Sorry, we're moving. We're out of here.
Yes.
He said, you would see a me-sized hole in the wall.
Exactly.
Get out. We're gone. Okay. We're out of here. That's it.
Who am I to question you?
Yeah. And so that limits it. There's not a whole lot you can do when every scare is going to be set up essentially the same way. But they do it really well. And on top of that, again, I recommend go see comedies, go see big blockbusters, and go see horror movies in theaters. It adds to the fun
mm-hmm.
because there was lots of laughter. And that is a biological response to being scared
mm-hmm.
when you know nothing can happen to you. You laugh. And there was plenty of laughter. Additionally, there were a few things that were legitimately funny in this movie. I enjoyed this movie. I had very low expectations when I hear, based off the YouTube video.
Yeah, what do you expect from that?
But wow, and go this guy.
Okay.
Creating a YouTube video and getting someone to agree to go see this, have fun. It is a summer horror movie.
It's called Lights Out.
Lights Out.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 7 out of 10. It's
okay.
A lot of fun.
All right.
For what it is.
Okay. Big movie blockbuster that's opening this weekend is Star Trek Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct in saying that's going to dominate the box office
this
weekend?
Yeah, it should. Yeah.
This is the 141st Star Trek movie-ish. I don't know how many there have been.
It's beyond numbers.
It was co-written by Simon Pegg, who is back playing the character of Scotty. And I went to see this last night, not at a press screening, but in a regular movie theater, and there weren't that many people there, which surprised me because it was the first showing of a Star Trek movie. Mm-hmm. I assumed that at least the Trekkies would be out, but they weren't. And the movie opens up with Simon Pegg. Before the movie even starts, you see Simon Pegg come on screen and essentially saying, hi, I'm here on the set of Star Trek Beyond, and I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for coming out to the movie, because when we make a movie like this, we make it so that you can see it on a really big screen, and he's motioning to the, you know, the size of the screen. And so I just want you to know, we really appreciate the fact that you're paying your good money to come and see a movie like this on a screen like this, and we hope that you'll continue to do that. I think this is part of a campaign to have the people who make these movies thank you like that, to,
mm-hmm.
instead of saying, well, I'll just wait for it to come on Netflix. I'll watch it on Amazon Prime. I'll watch it when it comes on HBO, whatever it is, to get you to go to the box office. It was very odd, because then we roll right into the movie, and it's just another Star Trek movie. And I mean that as just another Star Trek movie. It's got Kirk, it's got Spock, it's got McCoy, it's got Uhuru, it's got Sulu, it's got Chekhov, it's got the same kind of stuff you've seen in every other, and I mean every other Star Trek movie. It has a villain who's played by Idris Elba, who I'm going to talk about in a second. He plays Krall, this alien who lures the Enterprise into a trap. The Enterprise crashes on this planet. Krall kidnaps the crew, which doesn't really matter, because if you've ever seen a Star Trek episode or a Star Trek spinoff or a Star Trek movie, you know the crew is completely irrelevant. It's those six people, those six characters I just mentioned, There's actually an entire Star Trek movie, Star Trek IV, where it's just those six characters, and they fly an alien vessel with no crew whatsoever, and nobody else has to do anything ever. So the fact that Kirk's crew is taken from him, he should just go, well, that's going to be a load off the payroll. We can fly this thing without those people, 800 of them or whatever it is. But, of course, they have to go, and they have to rescue them, and they go to this planet, and they've crash-landed there. And
you sound disappointed he didn't let his friends die. Like, it's like, oh, gotta go rescue them.
I just think making a Star Trek movie central plot having to do with Kirk rescuing the
red
crew
shirts,
doesn't, the red shirts, they're expendable. On this planet, they meet an alien named Jayla, who's played by an actress named Sophia Boutella, who played the scissor-legged woman in Kingsman on Her Majesty's Secret Service. If you saw that movie, you know what that means.
Yes.
She works with them. They have to work out a plot where they all fight back against Krall, who has some device that does something. What Alfred Hitchcock used to call the MacGuffin. It doesn't actually matter what that thing is or what that thing does. It's that he has it, and they have to get it back for some reason. Otherwise, something really, really bad is going to happen. And I tried to pay really close attention, because I didn't go with my wife. I didn't go with any friends. I'm there by myself. There's only nine of us in the theater. I'm really paying attention to this movie, and I'm trying to figure out, what is the plot of this movie? Why is that thing so important? Okay, they've escaped from him, and now they have to get it back for... I don't know. I can't tell you. Put a gun to my head, I could not tell you what that is. But as Hitchcock used to say, that doesn't matter. I will tell you, the effects in this thing are, of course, good. Good CGI. Sometimes they're a bit much. There are also a few scenes in here that, especially with the 3D glasses on, are way too dark for you to really see what's going on. Also, and this is a complaint I've made about the two previous Star Trek movies that J.J. Abrams has done. He didn't direct this one. Again, a guy named Julian Lin did. Justin Lin, I'm sorry.
Fast and Furious.
Who did the Fast and Furious movies. We're always doomed to a future where the hero and the villain have to fight in hand-to-hand combat, usually atop a very tall structure overseeing some giant city or someplace like that. It always has to come down to that. So even in the 23rd century, we're still going to be having fist fights, apparently. There's also a ridiculous scene in here. Speaking of the MacGuffin, there's a scene in this movie where they're being led by this alien woman, Jayla, who they've befriended, through some complex of something, and Kirk goes, wow, is that what I think it is? And the camera pans over, and it's a really old motorcycle. Now, anybody who's ever seen an action movie knows that when the hero says, is that what I think it is? And they pan over to a motorcycle, within 15 minutes on screen, the hero is going to be riding that old motorcycle in a really exciting action sequence.
Yes.
And of course, that's what happens here on this alien world where he doesn't know where he's going and he's on a terrain that's completely uneven, but it doesn't matter. Because he found the really old motorcycle, he must use the really old motorcycle.
That was filled with gas.
That was filled with gas, yeah. And didn't have any other problems. I will say that there is a very, very, very nice tribute to Leonard Nimoy in this movie, with the guy who plays Spock now, whose name escapes me.
Yes, and it escapes me, too. He was the bad guy on Heroes in the first season.
Something with
the
Q, right?
Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, the guy who plays Nimoy, who plays Spock, has a scene where he sees a picture or something of Nimoy, and there's a very nice tribute, and the movie is dedicated to him. There's also a thing at the end where they dedicate it to the guy who plays Chekhov, who died a couple of months ago in a car accident when I think his car ran him over. Wasn't that the story?
Rolled over on him or something.
Anton Yelchin. There's also a very weird shot. Spoiler alert. I'm going to tell you about a spoiler alert right now.
Mm-mm.
Just a warning. There's a scene towards the end of the movie where Zachary Quinto, as Spock, looks inside of something that he's been handed down from someone. He looks inside it, and it's a picture. Now, maybe you can explain this to me. It's a picture of the original Star Trek cast members.
Uh-huh.
Who are dressed up for one of the movies. I think it's either 4 or 5, or maybe it was 6. But they're dressed up like that. But it's the original actors. It's Shatner. It's Nimoy. It's DeForest Kelly. It's James Doohan. It's Nichelle Nichols. It's Walter Koenig. And it's George Takei.
Yes.
They're all there, and they're dressed in their uniform. And so he's looking at a picture of them. And you can see he's thinking to himself, oh, that's so sad that we've lost. And the camera zooms in on Leonard Nimoy, which is the second little tribute they have to him in the movie. Now, here's my question. He is Spock.
Yes.
And the people he's with are Kirk and McCoy, and they're being played by all of these actors. So who are these people he's looking at a picture of?
Well, that is in the first, in the reboot, the J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
That has to do with time travel, and Leonard Nimoy is actually in it.
I know,
because,
and he's Ambassador Spock.
And so I think that's what it's acknowledging that there was another timeline, and he may be the only one that knows
it's
about it. Or some garbage.
It's completely out of place in this movie. It didn't need to be there. I know they wanted to do a big thing for Leonard Nimoy, who just died last year. I get that. He was important. He was probably the most popular character on Star Trek, Spock. But they overdid it with that part. I'll also tell you that there is a pretty good soundtrack in here with a prominent display of the Public Enemy song Fight the Power and the Beastie Boys song Sabotage, which, of course, has to be played while somebody is sabotaging something, because we can't be subtle in a Star Trek movie.
Do not get a Fast and Furious director if you want subtlety.
No.
Not their special.
This movie is okay. If you're really into Star Trek, you might think it's better than I did. If you're not into Star Trek at all, you're going to think it's worse than I did. I'm giving this thing a 6 out of 10. Star Trek Beyond, it's going to make a lot of money.
Yes.
And they've already talked about how there's going to be a fourth movie with these characters in it. Fine. It's, to me, I was telling Dan this before. To me, Star Trek movies have become like Bond movies. I feel like I have to go see them. And I always walk out and go, why did I go see that? Yep. Happens to me every time.
Yep.
And that's how I felt walking out of the movie last night. Now, about Idris Elba, who plays the villain in this, Crawl, this guy's having a hell of a 2-year run.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he's done in the last 2 years. He did the voice work for Finding Dory, the voice work for The Jungle Book, where he plays the villain, the tiger. He did voice work for Zootopia. He starred in Beasts of No Nation, which he won a Golden Globe for. And he was in The Avengers Age of Ultron. That's just in the last 2 years. And he's done other superhero movies before that as well.
Yep.
He's also going to be making a movie next year called Molly's Game, which I'm looking forward to, because I interviewed the woman who is Molly. Her real-life name is Molly Bloom. She's a woman who used to run the high-stakes celebrity poker games in Los Angeles with Tobey Maguire and Ben Affleck and Rick Solomon and all these people who used to play in those games. She wrote a book about her experiences about that. And how about this? When you write a book like that and then it gets optioned and you find out the screenplay is going to be written by and the director is going to
Aaron
be
Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin.
Yep.
Absolutely. How's that for just ringing the giant bell? Jessica Chastain is going to play her in the movie, and Idris Elba is in there as well. So, again, 6 out of 10 for Star Trek Beyond. It's not great, but it's okay.
You know? No.
It's a big screen special effects movie. And
it's a very crowded weekend for it to come out. That seems like bad planning.
Maybe the other studios looked at it and went, well, that's not going to be such a big deal, so we can come out with our movies at the same time.
Yeah.
We have two other movies to get to. Let's take a break for traffic and some commercials, and then we'll come back and we'll do that. We have Captain Fantastic, which stars Viggo Mortensen. And what's the other one that you have? Oh, Ice Age Collision Course,
which
will be the big kids movie for the weekend, right?
It'll be, it's coming out this weekend.
Oh, wow. There's a preview of Colin's review right there.
Oh, yeah.
Back in a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the showbiz segment of our Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geis, and Colin Jeffrey. Colin seemed to enjoy his movie choice thus far more than I did. He gave Lights Out a 7 out of 10. I just gave Star Trek Beyond a 6 out of 10. But there are two other movies opening up this weekend, and the one for the kids is Ice Age Collision Course. What number is this in the Ice Age series?
Number 5.
Okay. Nice. I remember seeing the original one, and it was funny.
The original one was funny. Then they did The Meltdown. Then they did Dawn of the Dinosaurs. Then they did Continental Drift. And now, of course, we're doing Collision Course. So naturally, this would be in space.
Wait a minute.
Yep.
The Woolly Mammoth and the other characters from the Ice Age are in space.
Sort of. The Scrat, the little saber-toothed rat, he's in space. Because he finds a UFO at the beginning of the movie and then is going on a tour of our solar system and crashes into a rock that is then hurtling towards Earth and is going to wipe out all life, just like it did with the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's based on a true story, Dan. Beat you to the punch there. Yeah, it's bad. Sure, there might be a few cute moments in there. There might be one or two things that'll make you laugh.
If you took your daughter, would she agree that this was a bad movie?
I took my daughter.
Yeah.
She watched the whole thing and was, I mean, she's four. She was, yeah, there's talking woolly mammoths and they're dancing and, you know, they're getting into shenanigans. And
okay.
Enough to keep her attention.
That's all she needs.
Yeah, it was 3D and it did that. It's like, yes, if I were four, sure.
Okay.
I will watch a 3D movie with talking animals.
What if you're eight? Which is really the target market for this movie.
I don't know. There were not, so I just saw with a lot of kids around us, The Secret Life of Pets, a week or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of laughter.
Mm-hmm.
This, not so much. Mm. Secret Life of Pets, which I was not a huge fan of, but okay, it's a movie for the kids. There were people applauding at the end of it, and parents saying, oh, was that cute? And Dan liked it. Dan gave it an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And this, there was not a lot of laughter. There was, the parents weren't walking out saying, oh, that was really cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a movie. Well. It is a cash grab. If they do another one of these, I will be upset with Dennis Leary. He needs to stop being a part of these.
What does he have to do with it?
He is a voice in it.
He's one of the Sabretooth.
Make them fighters. Explain what happened to his character to these little kids. Like, I just... They need to stop. Ray Romano needs to stop. Queen Latifah needs to stop. It is overstayed. It's welcome.
Scale of 10?
This is a generous 2.
Okay.
Whoa.
This is a very generous 2.
Yeah, well, Leary, his character looks like the Sabretooth on the Flintstones. It kind of is one of their pets.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the final movie of this week, I just want to take a moment to do a little tribute to Gary Marshall. One of the people in show business who has just been around forever and done so much. This is a guy who was writing for Jack Parr and Lucille Ball and the Dick Van Dyke Show and Danny Thomas and Joey Bishop in the 60s. And then in the 70s created Happy Days and all of its spinoffs, and then went on to direct movies like Pretty Woman and Nothing in Common, and some other great ones. Recently, we kind of have made fun of Gary Marshall because he's made movies like Mother's Day and Valentine's Day and New Year's Day, and they were all chick flicks. But he did a lot of stuff that had female appeal and was very successful at it. And he also had an acting career. He appeared in a few movies. I think the greatest scene he ever did was with Albert Brooks in a movie called Lost in America. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was telling you that Albert Brooks's original movies, the ones he wrote and directed, were finally available for streaming on Netflix, including probably one of the two or three movies that are really worth your time, called Lost in America. I'm going to play you a clip from this movie. Yeah, at this point in the movie, Albert Brooks and his wife, played by Julie Haggerty, have gone to Las Vegas to get remarried. They've dropped out of society, but they're going to get remarried in Las Vegas. And in the middle of the night, Julie Haggerty has gone down to the roulette table and lost all of their money. All of their nest egg. And so Albert Brooks goes to the casino manager, played by Gary Marshall, and tries to convince him in a very compelling argument to give them their money back, but they're not getting their money back.
The casino is our main means of income, not the coffee shop, not the show. The casino, that's what pays all our bills. So if we give everybody their money back, we can't pay our bills. I'm sorry, we can't change our policy.
Okay, play a fun word game with me. This will do it. What do you think of when you think of a hunting lodge?
Hunt.
Yes. What do you think of when you think of a rest home?
Your rest.
So, you see, we're going to associate the Desert Inn with something beautiful. You don't think of anything here now, do you?
Gambling. That's why people come here.
That's
they
right.
They gamble. They want to go to hunting lodges. They go to Wisconsin. They want to rest. They go to New Orleans. They want to gamble. They come to Vegas. That's what it's called, gambling, Las Vegas gambling. You see signs around this town with guys with guns shooting ducks. It's a gambling place. They don't shoot ducks, raccoons, beavers. They come to gamble. That's what we do here. Now, you're a nice guy. You make me laugh and everything. But our policy is we can't give you money back. I'm real sorry. Say goodbye to your wife. I got to go home.
What about Miracle on 34th Street?
just a Christmas movie.
Yes, it was. Now, there was Gimbals, who was afraid that if they gave something up that they would lose. And they wound up benefiting. He was afraid that if he gave to Macy's, he would lose his business, and he didn't. It's the same situation. This costs you nothing. To give us our money back is nothing. You would be the one who would benefit.
Wrong. In that movie, Santa Claus took care of everything. There was Macy's, Gimbel's, but Santa Claus came and he fixed the whole thing. We don't have Santa Claus.
Then we get him.
Who?
Santa Claus. We get him. That's the ad campaign. There it goes. I have the chills. We get Santa Claus. He's the one on the billboard. He hands us our nest egg. We associate for the first time ever Christmas and Las Vegas. Las Vegas, a Christmas place to be.
We're finished talking.
Justice delivery on the last line. We're finished talking. And Santa Claus.
Yeah, Santy.
That's Gary Marshall as an actor, and he was tremendous. We're going to have a whole category about him in the Harris Challenge in about a half hour. We lost him this week at age 81. The fourth movie to review this week. Colin, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, you were talking about movies that have horrible titles.
Yes.
Horrible titles.
Yes.
I have one of those for you today, and it's a shame because it's a very good movie. The movie is called Captain Fantastic. When you hear that, don't you think in the summertime, Captain Fantastic, superhero movie?
Yeah.
Gonna be lots of special effects, maybe animated, maybe live action, but that's a superhero movie, Captain Fantastic, or it's a bad Elton John album from 1976.
Yes.
With the sequel, The Brown Dirt Cowboy.
Yep.
No, that's not what it is.
The only two in the room that got that.
I think Tim might have gotten it up in the...
Oh, Tim play. Did get yeah. it, yeah.
Captain Fantastic is the story of a father of six children, played by Viggo Mortensen. Six children with whom he lives in the woods in the Pacific Northwest.
He was in Ghostbusters too, wasn't he, Viggo? He was in the painting?
That was not him.
Oh, okay.
It's a different one. but Viggo Mortensen was in a great movie a few years ago. You mentioned Maria Bello is in Lights Out.
History of Violence.
Yes, the two of them are in History of Violence. That's one you can put on your Netflix queue. It's worthwhile. So in this one, Viggo Mortensen and his six children are living in the woods, and he is essentially homeschooling them in every aspect of their life. And they have physical training where they go on runs, they go on hikes, they go rock climbing, they learn how to shoot, they learn how to kill animals for dinner, they learn all of those things. Plus, he has lots of books, and they read, and they know about history and philosophy and all sorts of things. They play music, and they live in the woods, and they have a wonderful life. It's just these seven people. Well, their mother was with them as well, but she got sick at some point, and we find out relatively early on, I'm not spoiling this for you, the mother, who we haven't met yet, dies. And so Viggo Mortensen and the kids, they go into town, a nearby town, on their Partridge Family-like bus, and he calls his wife's, now dead wife's, parents, and gets the story from them on what happened. And the father, played by Frank Langella, says, yes, we're having the funeral. Don't show up. You are not welcome there. It's obvious that these people, who are probably a little bit more traditional, weren't all that thrilled with their daughter going and living off in the woods with this guy who might have a cult of his own with these six kids that he's raising. They're not really sure. Of course, you can't keep Captain Fantastic down, and so Viggo gets the six kids together, they get on the bus, and they make the trip to, I think it's New Mexico, to go to the mother's funeral. And while they're there, they encounter a world that they're not all that familiar with. A world of fast food, a world of people doing things that they've never seen before. Remember, they live in the woods. They're not really that good with social interaction with people who are not relatives of theirs. And so it's a very interesting look at how these people can get by on a daily basis when they're in the real world. Frank Langella is great as the dead woman's father. Anne Dowd plays the mother. She's also very good in this. There's also an extended scene with the dead mother's sister and brother-in-law, who are played by Catherine Hahn and Steve Zahn. And it's very interesting to see them with their two teenage boys dealing with this family that lives in the woods and how there's a real culture clash because, you know, these kids, they play Xbox and PlayStation all day long. They love that sort of stuff. The kids who grew up in the woods have never seen or heard anything like this. And so you see that giant culture clash going on between them. I'm telling you right now, it sounds like a weird movie. But it's wonderful. Uh-huh. It is original. I've never seen a movie quite like this. This movie is going to spark debates among people who see it about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate in parenting, what's right in education, and how you handle grief, and how you hold a family together in the midst of the oddest time of their lives. I'm giving this movie an 8.5 out of 10.
Really?
I consider it one of the best movies that I've seen this year. It's called Captain Fantastic. Do not let the title scare you away. It's a grown-up movie. Don't take the kids to see this mm-hmm. one because there's stuff in there they probably should not be exposed to, including the opening scene where you see them kill that. And strip a deer in the woods. It's very, very graphic. And there's other stuff. There's some nudity that takes place later on in the movie that would not be appropriate for kids. But I will tell you that this movie moved me and made me think a lot, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's called Captain Fantastic. My best recommendation of the movie this weekend.
So it's a bad title. What would your title have been?
I have no idea.
Family in the Woods.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Or just Family. Mm. Or...
just not Captain Fantastic.
Yeah, because Captain Fantastic, in the summertime particularly, or you know, even if you release this in October or November, people wouldn't know what that was. They're going to see that title, and they're going to think, oh, it's a superhero movie.
Yeah.
And it absolutely is not. So skip that.
A last movie just to let you know about is Hunt for the Wilder People, Wilder mm-hmm. People. Mm-hmm. Takes place in New Zealand. A young boy that had been raised essentially on hip-hop and in the foster care system is transported to a family in the countryside of New Zealand. Tragedy strikes, and he's left on his own with just the family dog named Tupac, and they go off in the wilderness and are then being hunted down by the police because it's a kid and a dog on their own, and that's not good. So I know nothing else about it other than that. It's not getting a super wide release.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right. I have a Netflix suggestion for you mm-hmm. from a movie I reviewed just 2 months ago, and it's already out on Netflix. It's called Elvis and Nixon. Dan, when I first yep. talked about this, you sounded like you really wanted to see it. Did you ever see it?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, it's streaming on Netflix now. I strongly recommend it with Mike Shannon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like to see President Nixon.
He plays Elvis Presley, the actor Michael Shannon, not that Mike Shannon, and Kevin Spacey plays President Richard Nixon, and it's a true story. Dan's always asking, is this based on real life?
Yes.
No, this is based on a real incident where Elvis Presley showed up at the northwest gate of the White House with a 6-page letter and wanted to meet President Nixon in 1971 and...
Be deputized
as an undercover federal officer. It sounds bizarre. It sounds like the sort of thing you would make up for a comedy, but it's real, and the movie is wonderful, and the impersonations are very, very good, and the whole thing is really, really entertaining. It's called Elvis and Nixon. It's streaming on Netflix right now. And that's all the showbiz stuff we have for you this week here on the Big 550 KTRS.